Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA, irishradio.com, and I'm delighted to welcome a friend of ours for forever. As a matter of fact, this friend, before I introduce him, he abandoned a very promising career as a musician and as a singer with the Emeralds, John O'Neill and the Emeralds, and Congressman Joe Crowley. You're very welcome indeed.
Thank you, AJ. No, you just hit a bell when you mentioned John O'Neill, God rest his soul, and the Emeralds, and my first paid gig.
Yeah. What was the union skill? Oh, yeah. Forget about that part. All I know is that, you know, I had earned a spot. I thought I was like, you know, the band leader's assistant, and then you and Tommy O'Neill came in, and I was relegated to the back of the stage. And, you know, we don't hold grievances, so, but I just
thought, no, not at all. No.
Joe, again, first of all, you're very welcome. The uproar, the upset of the coronavirus compounded by an extension of the insanity of the last 4 years, double whammy. What's your view on, how the election took place, how this country appears to be almost evenly divided in terms of political affiliation?
Well, I think it's a great question. First off, the pollsters got it wrong. They got it right, and they predicted Joe Biden would win. But they got it wrong in terms of how he would win. He didn't run away with Wisconsin. He narrowly won. What he was able to do is reestablish the blue wall by winning in Wisconsin, winning in Michigan and in Pennsylvania, and then add to that winning in Georgia, as well as Nevada and Arizona. And so what it does demonstrate is a couple of things. As my good friend and my former colleague John Boehner, Speaker Boehner, says, red America got redder and blue America got bluer. You had the highest turnout of any presidential election in the history of the United States. Donald Trump, love him or not, he garnered more votes than any person in the history of the United States running for president, but for one person, and that person being Joe Biden, who got 6 or 7 million more votes than he did. So it was remarkable in that sense that it does show the divide that exists in the United States politically. And why I think in terms of Biden's first speech on that Saturday, 2 weeks or 3 weeks ago, we should say today, that it was determined that he was the winner, where he said he wanted to heal the wounds of the country, wanted to bring people together. And I think that's sincere. I think he actually wants to do that. I think it's in his nature to want to do that.
Joe, can we go back, though, 4 years, and if you don't mind my plain devil's advocate because that's how I'm still in business. But Hillary Clinton, if we go back 4 years, was again very narrowly defeated by Donald Trump. And I'm sure that a lot of those who support Trump say, you know, we Democrats have some nerve, some cheek to be, creating a rumpus when in fact, if we go back 4 years, many of us had great difficulty in accepting the fact that Hillary lost.
Right. In looking at this, the election process works as long as I get reelected. That speaks to the mindset from the president. When the same system was in place when he won, and as much as Democrats were not happy with that, there was an acceptance that goes along with that ultimately as well, as you mentioned, that Democrats had to get over, and working towards the next election, which they did and was successful in terms of turning them out. You know, for me personally, looking back 4 years ago, I didn't realize it at the time, but I think it was the end of my career in elected political office when I lost, when I lost 2 years later. But it happened 4 years ago on election night when Hillary lost to Trump. What had happened in terms of, I think my constituency's response to the Trump election could not be really challenged in terms of putting out a Democrat or putting out a Republican. But in many respects, I think it incentivized the angst and the upset that was in the district. We saw with the Women's March, we saw with what happened in terms of the Me Too movement, that was a contributing factor, I think, in terms of my own loss 2 years later. So, you know, people have said that, yes.
How long were you, how many times did you serve at Hub? What was the...
10 terms, 20 years in the House.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, there was also, I think, a number that, you know, the familiarity breeds contempt to some degree, I think, is also something that comes into play. But, you know, people railed against us as the, you know, the Queens County Party, and as me as a chair, I was the corrupt Queens County Party. You know, when you win elections, it's one thing, but when you lose elections, you're corrupt. Supposedly, you know, I guess we're not so good at. I guess we weren't as good at being corrupt as people thought we were. You know, but the same thing in terms of national elections as well. You know, you if you accept the win under those terms, under those rules, you need to really come about and accept the loss when it happens as well. And I think that's what's unfortunate here in terms of Trump not being willing to, at this point, at least accept verbally that he's lost.
Yeah. For many people, including ourselves here, Anya and I, who were very disappointed at your loss, we actually got over it quite quickly when you signed on to a great and prominent lobbying firm, Squire Patton Boggs, and got a taste of big bucks. and I hope, without hinting, that you will remember the less fortunate. And but it seems, though, Joe, as you've pointed out there, was 2016 this turning point? Was it, was this a reaction, you know, to the unexpected that Donald Trump would become president?
I think in many respects it was. I do think that was, you know, one of the motivating factors. It really riled people up, you know, in both parties, quite frankly. The enthusiasm which grew for Donald Trump within his own party, in his own ranks, certainly amongst the base, and the angst that was created, I think, within the Democratic circle, but especially in terms of the far left base of the party itself, that I think contributed to the change in dynamics, I think, throughout the country. And that's only been furthered, I think, by the Black Lives Matter movement and the quest for social justice in the United States, furthering from the civil rights movement of the 60s, coming off of a long history in our country of civil unrest, so, which is a contributing factor, I think, in this election as well. But, Adrian, I think what's also important to point out, though, that Hillary lost the consensus of the Electoral College, but not of the United States. And that is the uniqueness of our nation in terms of this. And, you know, it's no news to your listeners in terms of our process. But it sometimes works and sometimes works against what works for you and sometimes works against you, I think, as Donald Trump has recognized this year. But even to have a state like Georgia, which was once a deeply red state, now is more purple, maybe turning blue because of the changing demographics and the level of voter participation that has increased as well, that I think has made some of these changes a reality.
I want to tread lightly here, but the president-elect Joe Biden happens to be a product of my hometown of Ballina, and I just throw that one out there because, you know, I'd be very mad at myself if in this interview I didn't point that out. However, let's get over this. Joe Biden, and again, against some heavy-duty odds, considering how the political scene has changed over the last 4 years. Joe Biden, and what can we expect from the next president of the United States? Well, first of all, overall, and then in particular, how is Ireland going to make out?
Well, and I want to congratulate all the people of Ballina and Mayo, your hometown. You know, but I also have to point out, I think you know where this is going, that I have loud connections. And we also know the Cooney Peninsula is also home to Joe Biden's ancestors as well. So he's bicoastal when it comes to Ireland.
On your country.
But there's no question he is deeply ensconced in Ireland and Irish and his Irishness. I think they came out with the Heaney poetry and that's not new for Joe Biden. That's something that he's always been about. And I think when it comes to his presidency, I do think he's about trying to heal the nation in terms of the wounds he sustained. That predated Donald Trump. He exacerbated it. He exploited much of the division and continues to do that now. But I do think that's going to be his goal. I think immediately out the box, we need to really cross this virus. We need to get it under control. And we're heading in that direction. And good news all around in terms of Oxford and AstraZeneca and Moderna and Pfizer and all the advancements in terms of vaccines that are being created. We need to get the economy moving again. I think, beyond stimulus packages, we need to get an infrastructure bill done. We need to invest in roads, tunnels, bridges, broadband, schools, really invest in America. And I think for every dollar spent in infrastructure, that ancillary, increase in terms of our economies, it's a multiplier effect of 6 to 8 times every dollar spent in infrastructure and job growth and creation. I think that's where the focus is for Biden right now. I think the broader agenda that he had, you know, you're dealing with a split government in terms of Democrats controlling the House, Republicans controlling the Senate, a divided government. And, you know, I think he, being a man of the Senate, a legislator in his own right for many decades, he understands how the House and Senate operate. And I think that bodes well for his presidency in terms of his relationship with the likes of Mitch McConnell.
Yeah.
In terms of Ireland, I think it's actually very, very positive, too. So,
at all. Yeah, it's particularly, timely and positive at a time that even before he sworn in as President of the United States, Brexit is, you know, Britain exiting the European Union is in fact at the 11th hour right now, and it doesn't look as if this is down to the wire. There's not going to be any further extension in Britain getting in or getting out, one or the other.
Right.
How, obviously we're aware that soon-to-be President Joe Biden has had not a recent but a constant track record of keeping his eye on something that do affect us. Top of that list would be Brexit. And, you know, his interest in making sure that we don't go backwards and wind up with a border in Northern Ireland.
Well, just this week, Agent, you know, that he said earlier in the week that he doesn't want to see a guarded border. Well, that really is reference to, obviously, to Ireland in terms of reestablishment of any border checkpoints between the North and the South. And that comes after decades of his own involvement and his respect for the peace process, also known as the Good Friday Agreement. You know, this Brexit play has always gone to the wire. That at least has been my experience so far.
Sure.
But you're right, they're coming to a deadline now, and I think the timing could not be better in terms of keeping Britain's feet to the fire and forcing them to maintain their obligation to the Good Friday Accord, an international agreement that was broken by the United States. And, you know, many people have said about Joe Biden and others, and including myself and others here in the States of Ireland, have said that somehow this is a romantic view that we have of Ireland. This is not. There's nothing romantic about the end of violence. There is nothing romantic about an agreement that had that cessation take place that was recognized by the world. That's not romance. That is practical politics, and that is practical governance as well. And so for those who would say that he has to dislodge himself of this romance, I say, no, that's not the case at all. We've known families that have suffered, newer families that suffered because of the divide in Ireland. And this is not a time of going backwards, but to be moving forward. And so, yeah, this is a problem for Britain. There's no question about it. But they're a problem they need to fix and a problem that they need to recognize and maintain that those borders remain open you want to bring back violence, and I don't ever see that go back. But you know, leading to that would be a reestablishment of some type of a border. We just simply cannot have that on the island of Ireland.
Yeah, Joe, I want to ask you on a different level. We've had the comfort through your 20 years in Congress, and then continuing. The congressional friends of Ireland, and we now are about to lose Pete King, very much, a cross section of Congress people who were kind of watching the store for, you know, better than 20 years. How is that going to affect the overall picture of Friends of Ireland or lack thereof in Congress as we move forward?
Well, I would add to that list Mike Capuano from up in Boston. He's half Irish, very much identified with his Irish side, was involved in a lot of those meetings on Capitol Hill throughout his 20 years in Congress. And just also Elliot Engel. Again, someone who was not of Irish descent at all, but took a tremendous interest in a similar way that Mara Biaggi had done over the years. But, you know, there's no question, Adrian, that I think Irish America has taken on the chin in terms of the changing demographics of our country and the politics, especially within inner cities like Boston, like New York, like Chicago and elsewhere. But what I also find really interesting although I was turned down 2 years ago in Elliot Engel, but especially myself 2 years ago, to see my mirror image elected president of the United States in my party was just remarkable and something that gave me and that heartened me tremendously as well. In Joe Biden, in many respects, the mirror image of myself. But I also think it's important. Richie Neal is still the chair of the Ways and Means Committee, a very powerful position. When you walk inside Richie's office in Washington, you might as well be walking back into County Down or Ireland. He has a great affinity towards Down. And Nancy Pelosi, again, someone who has taken the issue of the Good Friday Accord under her wing, both in England or in Britain and in Ireland and here in the States, and has repeatedly said that the Good Friday Agreement must be respected by the British government. And having all that force, I think, speaks loudly. And how it's relevant, Adrian, let me put this in context. With the EU breaking, with the UK breaking from the EU and the desire for a free trade agreement with the United States, separate and apart from the EU, that's where this comes into play, why it's so important. And to have the resolve of Richie Neal and Speaker Pelosi, and I think now Joe Biden, There'll be no deal with the UK. I can see in the foreseeable future unless they have full respect for the implementation of the Good Friday Agreement.
And of course, that was kind of mixed in with the rhetoric of the lead up to this election, and perhaps again some people say, well, you know, that was the topic, you know, that was a hot topic and a popular topic until the election. But now reality is here.
Mm-hmm.
And I, without taking anything away, obviously, from the new president, Joe Biden, Congress has a tremendous, obligation, or indeed is very, very much a part of as we go forward in terms of what happens, not just on the Good Friday Agreement. But that brings us to immigration, something that you have been involved in since you left the Emeralds. And let me just ask you where we are in terms of on what can we expect with the new administration and a threat, actually, that the Senate will remain in the majority and in the Republican end. What can be different? What can be done? We all know Nancy Pelosi. We all know that Joe Biden. We know that, again, the Friends of Ireland are there. But in reality, what does that mean, and when will it happen?
Well, I think in the first part of that, I think, unfortunately, and this dates back to Obama's era in terms of the use of executive orders, and that was largely driven by the Senate not cooperating with him and wanted to make him a one-term president. That didn't happen, but they continued not to cooperate. But that sort of happened in terms of the Trump administration, the use of executive orders, especially as it pertains to the environment and reducing the levels of government involvement. When it comes to the immigration issue, I think you're going to see a reversal of some of those executive orders as it pertains to the Dreamers and their families and their parents in the first place, to give them some peace of mind. They will not be deported. But I think this overall issue is in need of a solution, and I do think that Joe Biden would like to try to get something done. And it really will depend on what the cooperation level is in the Senate at this point. I do think there's a deal to be made. I think there are business interests that want to see H-1B visas expanded, want to have more opportunity to bring in talent from outside the United States that is not being homegrown at the moment. And so I do think there's a deal to be made, and one that would, I think, actually help our economy as well. Whether or not the Senate will be up to that remains to be seen. But I do think, Adrian, that there's going to be a little bit of a shortened bandwidth within the House of Representatives, because the House will be up for election in 2022, the whole House. And the party of the incumbent president, in this case Democrats, tend to lose seats in the first midterm election. Now, added to that, the Senate itself, there are about three Republican senators to every one Democratic senator up for re-election in 2022. So it's going to create what's going to be an interesting atmosphere politically in just 2 years. And that's not light years away. That's just 2 years away. So the politics and the wrangling already begin. But I think Biden does look for opportunity. I think he's going to look for opportunities to get some things done. Like I said, first is COVID. Then I think an infrastructure bill. I think we're going to make some changes on health care. But I think immigration is going to be up there as well.
And obviously, and regrettably, the protection and the reality that there's no reason not to, to establish positivity for the Dreamers. Explain that one to us anyway. The Dreamers Act, what does that do?
Well, it was for individuals who were brought here by their parents under the age of 16 and now have been living here for some cases, decades, would give them the ability to live and work and go to school here in the United States with a change in the executive order. And to compound on to that, would give their parents the ability to stay here as well without having ICE come and knock on the door in the middle of the night. That's basically what it would do. But it's not a solution to the overall immigration problem that we have. And it does not give a valve to other nations that are looking to have immigration from their countries to the United States, which we have welcomed throughout our history and will continue to welcome, I hope, in decades to come.
Joe Crowley, once I just ask you, though, in terms of the chicken and the egg, okay, you have obviously a fairly high level of support for the Dreamers, as you've just described.
Mm-hmm.
Does that have to be sorted out before we take the, whatever it is now, 12 to 13 million people who are in the United States without the benefit of indeed certification, or more crudely, illegally?
Well, I think what you'll see, first of all, is a de-weaponization of ICE.
Okay.
So back when I was running, you know, the call for abandoning ICE, and I could not in good conscience come out in favor of that because, one, I was a leader in the party, and anything I said would have been assigned to people running in other parts of the country. But, as much as I did not like what ICE was doing, that directive was coming from the top. So almost immediately with a new director of the Homeland Security, Secretary of Homeland Security, we'll see a different directive given to ICE and to the agencies throughout the United States that will give reprieve to some of these folks who are fearful of being deported in the first place. But it does not give a permanent solution or define that. We have to have Congress itself reestablish itself as a co-equal branch of government. And not subservient to the White House, and bring them back some political courage in doing what's the right thing for the United States, and not always what's the right thing politically.
I want to bring it back, again, no sour grapes here, but when you were recommended to the MOs, your mom was quite instrumental in that. I don't know if she knew that or not, but she said, come on, give the kid a break. And so...
I think that was more Peter O'Neill who did that.
Your mom, you came from a very musical family. Mm. And indeed, your brother Sean is still... kind of competing with you for, for a top slot there. But tell us about growing up in a household where song and music was a part of that process. It was ingrained.
It was all everything we were about in many respects. I remember being a young boy watching TV on the old Magnavox, black and white, and my father said, who wants to go to the circus? And I was 4 years old, and I raised my hand, I want to go to the circus, and he out into the car, get into the car, and pulls up to the hospital where I was born, and I knew I was in for something, and after going back and forth in the back seat, no seatbelts in those days, no car, no kid seats, I finally gave up my dad and walked into the hospital, had my tonsils out, and I came out the next day after having been in the ward or thereabouts, and getting in the car, my mom had me in her lap in the front seat with those seat belts.
Yeah.
And she started singing Roddy McCauley, and I said, Mom, not Roddy McCauley. I love that song so much, I didn't want to be associated with my being abandoned in the hospital for a couple of days. But, aging, my mom would sing in the front seat. We'd sing, Sound of Music and Doe a Deer, and we would sing the, we would sing in the backseat. My mom would do the harmonies, and that's how we kind of started from there. And Irish songs were always a part of our lives, sing songs at the house, you know. So it's always been a part of my life, and I think, you know, identifiably something that people saw I had passion for as well, and something I cared about greatly and still do.
You know, if we go back, it's got to be 85, 86 somewhere. And I think we got the first play on radio of a record of your mom and her singing. And so that's one, the original copy of that is not for sale, but maybe I can tape a copy of it and send it to you if you behave yourself. But tell us about, because this is really, really important. When so many people, particularly in the Irish-American circle, recorded some records and essentially or primarily these records were recorded, and then when bands and groups, were performing, you could buy the record afterwards and whatever. But so many of those have actually got lost along the way, and some are gathering dust. But to have, you know, a recording of your mom going back 34 years or so, how, your mom does not sound like somebody say, hey, I think I want to make, a record and get into the competition of how many sales, I have. And as I mentioned to you many times before, I produced a CD, and it has the distinction of never having sold even one copy. But I've given boxes of them to, my kids and friends, and one day I'm going to rally them all and say, did anybody keep even one copy of the CD? Bring us to that time, and what the idea... What the idea was, and how did you go about it? How did you get mom to?
No, it's great, great story. My grandmother, my dad's mom, loved my mom singing, and she came to me. She said, for posterity reasons, she just wanted it preserved, and she said, I want you to make a record of your mom, and went to a small studio in Richmond Hill in Queens, and. Laid down a couple of tracks with Tommy Mulvihill,
yes,
and Kevin O'Neill, a number of other musicians, and my mom recorded four songs, and I did a couple of tunes myself, but really was focused on my mom, and we made that record. It was called Maud Records, named for my grandmother Mary. They called her Maud, my mom, is now 87, and she won't be mad at me if I haven't said that, but she had cancer a couple of years ago of her jaw, and she lost her lower right jaw, and she had a tough slog coming back from that, and she has difficulty speaking, and she can't even sing really anymore. So our thought was to get those tapes. I had them digitized. Sent them off to my good friend, our good friend, Gabriel Daniel,
who's
a masterful, masterful musician and a great recording engineer. And he has turned what were very simple guitar, accordion, and little synthesizer and singing into a full orchestra. And it is just wonderful. So we're working on the final touches on some of them, and I hope to get them on Spotify. Again, not for the purpose of sale, but just to preserve. And my mom is a great singer, and she still has a great love for music, and it's something that's, I think, helped her through this difficult time as well, and helped all of us through it.
It's something. We don't have the actual finished product, but we we have, you know, a rendition of a couple of songs from your mom. And so if you can help us in that sense, and you have, you sent us a couple of tracks, but obviously we'd be delighted with the end product. Great to know that your mom is doing well. That was some to overcome that cancer and jaw cancer is terrific. And we wish her luck. And on this Thanksgiving weekend, Joe, we wish you and your family luck. And those little kiddies that you would bring into the studio on St. Patrick's Day, they're not little kiddies anymore.
No, not at all.
Where are they?
Well, my oldest, Cullen, is a junior or third year midshipman at the Naval Academy. And our daughter, Kenzie, is a sophomore at Notre Dame in South Bend.
Wow.
And our youngest, Liam, has started high school this year. So
Wow. We wish you luck. Is there any harm to ask you, is there a bone in your body that would consider re-entering the political field? Are you quite happy where you are and still having tremendous input into the political arena?
Well, there's no question, being a square at Patton Boggs, I'm not a registered lobbyist, but I've been able to really delve into some issues that still matter to me, and I've had some successes as well. I haven't made that leap into lobbying because I wanted to keep my options open, and I may still very well do that. I haven't done that as of yet. I never say never. I'm actually very content with my life at the moment. But there may be other opportunities I would explore. You know, if the president were to call me and say, Joe Crowley, we desperately need you, I'm not holding my breath. But, well, that would certainly be something that I would have to consider. But I'm just right now, Agent, just really pleased that our country seems to be getting back on track. And with the election of Joe Biden, I think we're going to be well off, for better, much better off in the next 4 years, in my sense. I know not everyone agrees with that, but that's how I see it.
Joe Crowley, finally, I would like to acknowledge and pay tribute indeed to a very good friend of ours who helped both of us along the way, and did so quietly. But John Geary, our great friend, and he was somebody who, you know, again, had served in the New York State Legislature for a couple of decades.
Mm-hmm.
He was and has been such a tremendous influence that as we look at, you know, the presidential form, which he not only invented and founded, but actually maintained through every election, he needs an award. He wouldn't take it. He needs recognition. He's not looking for it. But I think that it would be very appropriate for us to acknowledge, you know, the great influence of John Deary.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, as you know, Adrian, one of my mentors and someone who I'm incredibly close to, as I know you are as well. But John, you know, aside from the presidential forums and the magic that he was able to do in 1992 with then presidential candidate Bill Clinton, that I think in many respects began the change in Ireland, in the North and South, and our relationship with Britain. You know, but even before that, the McBride principles, the work that he'd done on special envoy when he was in the State Assembly and bringing that campaign to a national campaign. In many respects, he has been overshadowed by others, and others who have done great things as well. But I hope at some point in the near future that John is recognized, fully recognized for all the things that he had done and all the things he accomplished and attempted to do, and I think was very successful doing in terms of bringing the issues forward for Ireland and for Irish America as well. So, You know, hope springs eternal for John.
Yeah.
And, one day it will happen, I think.
Former U.S. Congressman Joe Crowley, and indeed brought us maybe some hope, and spells out some of what we can expect from your lips to God's ears. Joe, again, always admire and cherish your friendship, and as you continue to help, and take care of, through your influence, the Irish community and the Irish American community, as well as others. You're always there, and thanks to you, and keep it up.
Thank you. Thank you, Adrian, to you as well, and I look forward to be coming back on your show again. It's been too long since I've been away. I'm also working on a musical for Broadway and a number of interesting projects that I'm working on that have Irish connections. I'd love to come back and talk to you more about them. So.
Fantastic.
Thanks, Adrian.
Love it.
All the best.
Okay.
For
and happy Thanksgiving weekend to you.
Yes, thank you.
And your family and your mom in particular.
Thank you. It's all yours. Thank you, Adrian.
And you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. IrishRadio.com.
When first I saw the love light in your eyes, I dreamt the world held no but joy for me. I met you on the village green. Come to me ere my dream of love is o'er. I love you as I love you when you again, I was your happy bride. I kissed you as I did in old life time. As to the church, we wandered side by side. I love you as I never I met you on the village green.